As for wages, free contractual consent alone does not fix the just wage. In other words, you can't, the Leo is saying, you can't fix a just wage simply by market conditions. So the Leo is saying the free market is not necessarily just. And it's not necessarily right. That's why they accuse Leo of being a commoner. Nothing of the kind. That's what they accused him of. Man's work is both personal and necessary to him, so it must suffice to sustain him. Hence the just wage, this is a famous and important paragraph and a difficult question, the just wage must be enough to sustain a thrifty and upright worker and his family. A just wage does not mean luxury. A just wage does not mean paying a crook. A thrifty and upright worker and his family, enough to sustain in decent conditions, in modest but decent conditions, a worker who's wise with his money and honest. And that's a just wage. However, it is best if such questions are settled by the state only as a last resort. So there you see, Leo is not saying the state always ought to come in and say what the just wage is. He's saying that the state should come in as a last resort. It's best if these things can be left to be agreed between employer and employee. But if need be, the state will have to come in to protect usually the employee against the employer, but sometimes the employer against the employees, if the employees are all commoners or revolutionaries or bloodthirsty, whatever. Then the state may have to bring in the police to protect the property and to protect the owner against the... All workers should be able to practice thrift and be helped by the law to own property. And there's something very wicked in our own society. Thrift is completely discouraged by socialism and by inflation. What's the use of saving money if in a few years it's going to be only worth half of what you put away? It's a total discouragement of thrift. And therefore it's a discouragement of property. And therefore it discourages self-sufficiency and self-reliance. And therefore it debases your people. And there the anti-socialists are quite right. There the so-called capitalists are quite right. All workers should be able to... If more men own property, that would mean less revolutions, more wealth for all, and less emigration. That's a good principle which certainly Americans believe in. And it's been practiced in America. And it's given a good deal of stability to society. There's wisdom there. So long as government taxation is not excessive. So Leo doesn't want excessive taxes. Oh, there we go. Then he goes on, besides church and state, employers and employees can achieve much by private associations. There are the guilds again. That's the guilds coming back. Notably, workers' associations, for instance, the guilds of yesteryear, let these be adopted and fostered. Man forms as naturally into private associations as he forms into civil society. These private associations exist not for the public good, but for the private good of their members. They have a right to exist and they should be protected by the state in everything which is not immoral. That's the wisdom of Catholic society. The state will protect the guilds because the guilds will look after their members and give them a certain amount of self-sufficiency and independence. And the wise state will protect these under-organizations. It won't crush the under-organizations. The modern state crushes under-organizations. The individual is on his own, naked, in front of the power of the massive state, the federal government today. The whole, you see, how it hits, and the social question is a big, big question, and this Rerum Novarum is the most famous encyclical on it. You can just maybe see why.
Yeah, but it's on socialism, and I don't know, I don't like that whole thing here, because it's... I just, that socialism, that's for me, that's a red text, you know, and all this with the, I don't know, it's one thing, and I expected Your Excellency to talk about modernism this morning on Pashendi.
Don't worry, we'll come to Pashendi. Now you see, Joseph is accusing me of saying I'm going to be a communist.
No. But I expect it because I wrote down 9 o'clock, Pashendi.
Yes, I know, Joseph. I know.
So and you know, I it's not you. I'm feeling anything what has to do with socialism and all that. You won't do it anyway, you know. It is maybe good to know it, and more or less I know it, but it's something for me.
The Pope on the previous page refuted socialism. We've not gone through that. The reason I'm going, the Pope is in balance, right? There is a balance, okay? But the reason I'm going into it is because he raised the question of guilds, you know, and this is a very important question. I mean, we could easily have said, you know, we'll do Rerum Novarum, and if you find a copy and want to read it on your own, you know, but this is one of the most famous of all of these encyclicals, the Rerum Novarum. I hadn't put it on the board to do, but it's very precious because it teaches the balance that has to be struck. Free capitalism, as it's called, either capitalist liberalism or liberal capitalism, is not the answer.
No, what is the guild? Is it the way we had the guilds in Germany, like all these back in the Middle Ages?
Do you remember the Meistersinger of Nuremberg? Do you know that?
Oh, I mean, I know that. I wasn't sure if it was that, what you were talking
back
about.
Back in the Middle Ages, like the Shoemaker's Guild, Boilermaker's Guild, the...
Well, some of them, we had some of this year in the wandering, you know, to the...
Well,
all over
see,
Europe.
Thanks to Leo XIII and the Catholic Church, they were, to a little extent, there was an attempt to revive them in the 19th century. It didn't basically work because people were too far gone.
Greed?
Yes, greed.
The whole thing is greed.
That's correct.
Made up of greed, the bottom line, and that's all there is to it.
That's correct.
And nobody's going to change it for a comment or, you know, somebody who does a fair push the wrong button.
You know, the
Catholic Church moderates greed. It gets at greed from inside, and then all of these problems clear up, or a lot of these problems clear up. But if you don't get at men from inside, as you say, there's no solution.
You know who was the one who was 2 years ago canonized? Adolf Kolpe. Adolf Kolpe is the one who made the Catholic workers
guilt.
Yes,
you know? Yes.
And he is now all over the world.
Yes.
But it's now mixed, I'm a Kolpe member myself, mixed with modernism.
That's right.
But Adolf Kolpe is the one who started the real thing.
Well, there were also, just in France, there were a number of writers and there were a famous number, Le Play, Le Main, I think, the name, I forget the names, Adolf Main, Le Play is another famous one. There were several of them, and it's on the basis of what these men were doing, that Leo XIII drew up this encyclical. But the pitch was already too queer for the solutions to work. And men were moving too far away from religion, and moving all the time away from religion. And therefore these solutions weren't put into practice, and they weren't. But the church says how things could be straightened out. But they won't be straightened out by complete deregulation, which is what was being suggested. And it's an important point to realize. You know?
Could we finish going through this socialism now?
You'd still like to
continue? Oh, right. I've been in unions all my life because of my trade.
Yes.
Not because I wanted to, have to.
Right.
You know, to work. If I'm not a unionized worker, I don't work there, period.
Right.
So I'd like to finish going
through this. Sure. Well, because it's only a few more paragraphs with this.
Yes, please.
Then you might look on your own at, the refutation of socialism, which is the defense of private property. In other words, the Pope says, private property is a good thing, but it is not a god. Right? There's the balance. It's a good thing against socialists, but private property is not a god, and it is not the principle, as the capitalist liberals say. Because he's neither a capitalist liberal nor a socialist. The solution is elsewhere. Let's just look.
Is this encyclical infallibility involved in this document?
According to the ordinary, it would be no more than the infallibility of the ordinary magisterium. That this is what the church has always taught. It will be as infallible as the ordinary magisterium is. Right? Now, it's everything that's according to tradition in this, everything that the church has always taught is infallible because the church has always taught it. And that is essentially most of what Pope Leo is saying. He's simply reapplying to the modern situation the old principles of justice and charity, right? It's simply the reapplying of the old principles. to the new situation created by the end of the 19th century. A very dangerous situation, as the 20th century shows. If people had put into solution, into practice what the Pope said, we wouldn't have the 20th century today. Right? Go on. You had another question? No, right. We'll get to modernism. Don't worry. We're going to go inside and outside modernism, uphill and down dale, I promise you.
Is it true that typically the communists have found the guilds and the unions fertile ground for their spreading of their... Is that right?
The unions,
they've always
yes.
infiltrated unions and,
yes.
and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, indeed. Two reasons. One, because these unions aren't godly. There's no protection of the... There's no thinking of God in them.
Sorry, what was the question?
The question was, why have communists always been able to infiltrate trade unions?
Or why did they have in the past?
Yes. One, because the trade unions are not... The starting point is not godly. And he that gathereth not with me, scattereth. He that is not with me is against me. Right? If you don't put Jesus Christ into something, the devil is going to take over. That's the first point. Point two, the starting point of these trade unions is the assumption that you've got class warfare. And that is a communist principle.
Everybody should be equal, basically, right?
Yes, that we are naturally at war, and we have got to make war until we grab everything that they've got and equal it all out.
Right?
That's communism.
And that's what the trade union's line is, isn't it?
Basically, yes. Yeah. I would say basically. Kind of, yes. And that's a false principle. It's a false starting principle. Right? But it very much lines up with communism. You'll see what... communism will be 11 o'clock and 2:30, and you can see there the doctrine of communism. Right? Ruben?
That business of equality and equality is very...
It's nonsense.
Yeah, it's a bunch of hogwash.
That's right. That's...
I mean, I'm supposed to be as good as a guy that...
That's what the Pope says in paragraph 26. It's right up there. You see, three first assumptions, remember. 26, 27, 28. Men are not equal, except their human nature. Within human nature, all men are unequal. Secondly, men have got to work, and they're going to have to work by the sweat of their brow. There's no easy ride.
That's right.
27. 28, class warfare is not natural. In fact, what is natural, what is meant by God, is that all different and unequal men should use their unequal gifts to look after one another and complement one another. And the harmony of them all completing one another by their very different gifts is what makes the symphony of society in God's plan. Therefore, we should all look after one another according to our gifts. And the man who blacks my shoes, who polishes my shoes, is wanted by God, just as the man who, arranges all my town's affairs is wanted by God. The one tells me what to do, I tell them, but we're unequal, but you all need one another. St. Paul speaks about it, the foot can't turn around to the eye and say to the eye, I don't need you. And the eye can't turn around to the foot and say, I don't need you. The foot needs the stomach, needs the arm, needs the hand, needs the ears, needs the liver, needs the whole body is extraordinarily complicated and extraordinarily varied. If you think of the various parts of the body, how extraordinarily different they are, and yet everyone needs all of the others. It's extraordinary. The body is a marvelous symphony, and that's what society ought to be like. And some parts are very noble, like the eyes and the brain. And some parts are less noble, says St. Paul, and some of the parts that are less noble are given the most care and attention. And therefore, the handicapped and the poor and the miserable, the Catholic Church looks after especially. And the handicapped and the Down syndromes, they have their part to play in society.
I think that's why liberation theology, in my opinion, took off so quick in South America, because they made it look like the church and the communists were after the same thing, relief of the poor. Somehow, to me, it seems like that's how they got confused together.
Archbishop Lefebvre says that the greatest revolutionaries in Latin America are the Catholic priests, because the Catholic priests bought into the communist program. And the people have bought communism because the Catholic priests have promoted it. And the Catholic priests have promoted communism because the Catholic priests have lost their faith. And the Catholic priests, having lost their faith, they've got to find something to fight for, something that people will believe in, some crusade, and it's communism that fills the vacuum. Therefore, communism, as I hope you'll learn at 11 o'clock and 2:30 this afternoon, communism is essentially a substitute religion. It's a false messianism. It's a substitute religion. It's God for the godless.
Humanism.
A crusade for the crusadeless. A faith for the faithless. That's what communism essentially is. And it's bogus from top to bottom.
So, in two words, what's the difference between communism and socialism?
In two words, socialism is a mother of communism. Communism is a more extreme socialism. Right?
One is voted, one is imposed.
Well, one is voted and the other is imposed, if you like. Yeah. Socialism is voted and communism is imposed. Which, you know, you...
But the Pope will define socialism as the... one moment. Let's have a look. Has he got a definition here? Paragraph 7 on the previous page. The socialists propose... You know, we could easily have had socialism here, believe me, right? The socialists propose to abolish private property and to divide all wealth equally amongst everyone. That's the essential, that's the definition of socialism for Pope Leo. The abolition of private property and the division of all wealth equally amongst everyone. Now, communism, turn a few pages further on. Divine Red Interest on communism. Where does he define communism? Paragraph 8. Communism is an alluring offer of false salvation to the poor. That's a kind of definition of communism. Right? So communism goes much further than socialism, but the two are very, very connected. Right? Socialism is simply the stage on the way to communism. And then he gives you 8 to 14, the doctrine of communism. And then 15 to 18, the program of communism, the power of communism, and then 19 to 24, the fruits of communism. Right? Let's have a look just at the rest of socialism. It's not very difficult.
My priest after the war, a Franciscan, a very holy man, he told me once, never forgot that, everything was ism on the back. Communism, socialism, no good. You know, social and feminine. Yeah. Today, feminism, everything, that's no good. No good, no good. It just has all something to do this against the church.
What about Catholicism?
That's... No, it's not the real, that's what you excellently know. I'd say, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes. We know what you mean, yes. All right. Okay, let's have a look at this. Then he comes on to this question of private associations. This is his last. He had church, state, which is the public solution, and then the private associations, which are the private solution. So he doesn't, the Pope is not just pushing for state solutions, therefore he's not a socialist. He's pushing also for private solutions. And that's this whole section, 68 to 81, deals with guilds, or like guilds, a modernized version of the guilds. Let workers' associations be adopted and fostered. Man naturally forms into private associations, like he naturally forms into public society. These private associations exist not for the public good. The shoemakers don't have to look after the boilermakers. The shoemakers have to look after the shoemakers. But for the private good of their members. They have a right to exist, and they should be protected by the state in everything which is not immoral. It's the state's business to look after the Shoemaker's Guild and to look after the Boilermaker's Guild and to make sure that each guild does its own work and to hold the ring for the various guilds. Christian associations have been of especial benefit. Alas, the state has violated them. Alas, many of today's workers' associations are secretly directed against Christianity. That's the trade unions. The secret, he that gathereth not with me scattereth. There is sent the principles of godless. That's the tragedy. And where's the responsibility for the godlessness of the working class by the end of the 19th century? Where is the responsibility for the godlessness of the working class?
Protestantism.
It happened also in Catholic countries. Oh. The grandfather is always Protestantism, as I said, but it's the godlessness of the middle classes, the godlessness of the factory owners. The selfishness, greed, the greed and godlessness of the factory owners. It's the exploitation by the middle class which caused this reaction of the working class. The leaders always, the scripture says, the leaders bear a great responsibility. The more prominent your position in society, the more you will answer for when you appear before your maker, says scripture. Kings, watch out, says scripture. It's in one of the books of wisdom in the Old Testament. You will have a particularly heavy account to render before God. And that's what the church tells kings and leaders. Watch out. You've got a grave responsibility. If you misuse that, you're going to have a terrible eternity. And when the church says that to the leaders begin to, if they've got the faith, they begin to shape up and they begin to look after the people. When the leaders look after the people, the bitterness is taken out of the workers' conditions. And then they're perfectly happy and then everybody cooperates. And the leaders do what they do best, like American Airlines, and the workers do what they do best. And when the workers do what they do best, and the middle class does what it does best, and the leaders do what they do best, everybody's happy. No problem.
This may be coming through right now, because what they're doing right now, I'll give you an example, is TWA.
Yes.
I mean, Brother Carl had bought TWA.
Right.
TWA had a lot of money.
Right.
Brother Carl went in there and borrowed money against them, bankrupted the darn thing, right?
Right, right.
Now he came along and he said to the employees, I will give you this airline.
Yeah.
It is owned by employees and you give us 15% of the current wages, right? In turn, he loaned them $200 million to keep it going. TWA is flying today, owned by the owners, right? And they're getting 15%, they took 15% of
the all of the
wages to contribute to the functioning of the airline.
Yeah.
Now, this airline is owned by its employees.
Yes. How well is it working?
It's working, but the employees don't get nothing. They still got taken.
Yeah.
Because the big shark is always going to get the little fish.
The big shark is always going to get the little fish. That's
until,
the problem.
And D-Day comes for Carl and a lot of these people into different ballgame.
Yeah.
But I want to find out what Lord meant that the meek shall inherit the earth. I want to get a look into that one day. Because this shark's out here, we can't beat him. There's only one way to take him out.
There you see, the big shots are going to get the little fish, and the little fish dream of taking out the big shots. That's
right.
That's
like going on welfare. We can take them out. Imagine everybody is sitting back on Section 8. They pay you rent, they give you food stuff, plus a check.
Yeah, I see.
And with a big sign, hell no, I won't go.
See?
Right?
See, Joseph? That's what your liberty produces, you see. Whichever way you look at it,
sure.
Unless people are Catholics, the problem is always more or less insoluble.
That's right.
And the only solution, the only deep down solution is for people to become Catholics. Because Catholic employers naturally have some kind of charity towards their employees.
Oh, yeah, but
and Catholic employees will naturally have some kind of respect and deference towards their employers. Catholicism naturally puts back the relationships, the hierarchical relationships which make a society work happily. But without Catholicism, with these principles of revolution and liberty and equality, you devastate everything. Sooner or later, you devastate everything. We must finish this. And, I'll just run down this page. Thank God, many Catholics are striving to form associations truly beneficial to the workers. And he's thinking undoubtedly of Kolping in Germany and Le Play and Le Mans in France and others. Each such association should be free so to form as to promote the members' all-round welfare, but mainly their religious welfare. Let the workers be given religious instruction. You know, let the little associations look after the soul as well as the body, and even look after the soul before they look after the body. Today, you go into a factory and try talking that language, what would happen to you? They'd just laugh at you.
Yeah.
Well, they've got the pin-ups and the naked women all around the walls, and you go there and try to talk about religion. It's too far gone. It's too far gone. Let office obligations and funds, let offices, I think, there are many misprints in this. Let offices, obligations, funds be equitably distributed, and let disputes be arbitrated. Let provision be made against unemployment, sickness, old age, and misfortune. In the past, Catholic workers overcame great prejudice by their good example. Let industrious, in other words, hard-working and self-controlled Catholics do the same today and convert in this way the socialists. That would solve the problem. If the socialists would convert the Catholicism, that's what would solve the problem, he says. Anything else? You can tinker with the mechanisms as much as you like, but it's men that operate the mechanisms. Unless the men are changed, there's no use changing mechanisms. You have to change the men. It comes from inside out and not from outside in. Matthew.
Excellency, could you comment point 67 concerning taxation, please?
67. So long as government taxation is not excessive. Well, you'd have to look at the original encyclical. Look it up. Look, see what Pope says.
Well, I'm sure Paul doesn't give any numbers.
You can't.
What taxation is fair?
What taxation is fair?
What is it? Income tax. Is this fair tax? The idea.
The very idea of income tax. Again, something you have to realize is that modern 20th century conditions are not the same as 19th century conditions. The modern state is more complicated. People expect more. The modern life is so constructed that the government has to do more. It has to do more intervening. For instance, when each village all over the United States produced, when everybody traveled by horse, you couldn't have 48-foot trucks rolling staplers from Connecticut all over the country and making cheap staplers possible all over the country. If today we have such a luxurious way of life in which so many material goods are available to us so cheaply, it's because we've got 48-footers rolling all over the country. With the greatest of ease, with good highways, interconnected and so on. Now, just imagine customs barriers. I'm just producing examples, all right? Just imagine customs barriers between each of the 48 continental states. So that a 48-footer couldn't roll from Connecticut to California just like that, as it can now. A 48-footer would have to fill out papers at every single state border. You could never get the staplers from Connecticut all the way to California. California would have to produce its own staplers. Connecticut would produce its own staplers. Each state would produce its own things. It could no longer mass produce them. It could no longer produce them so cheaply, right? And therefore, people would be able to buy much less goods. Their standard of living would be lower, and it would be more local. They would live more locally, and they would live more lowly. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
In order to live with a high standard of living whereby all these tremendous goods, now it's not only the 48 states, it's Japanese radios, Japanese cameras, Japanese this, that, and the other, and they come across the ocean in shipfuls. And that's why we've got the pressure towards GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades. Because if GATT breaks down, we're all going to be back to producing our own radios and transistors. So the more you want a high standard of living by cheap goods mass-produced, the more you're going to have to synchronize a larger and larger area. And today's synchronization is reaching a world level. Now, I don't believe in a world government, but I can see if people have got to choose. If people insist upon a high standard of living, then they're going to have a universal government, right? If they want a local government, independent of all other governments, then they're going to have to have a lower standard of living. They're going to have to choose. But they can't have, and the way the world government is going to suck us all into the world government is by offering us a higher and higher and higher, cheaper and cheaper life. We're all going to be in luxury, swimming in luxury.
Hog heaven.
The world government is going to buy us by hog heaven, which is heaven for hogs, right? Which is mud, mud, glorious mud, right? Now, to come back to your question, which was
taxation.
Then, you see, the federal government, if there are going to be no tariff barriers, then the federal government, by the nature of people's desire for a higher and cheaper standard of living, the federal government is going to have to take over more control. If people want local control, they'll have to pay the price, which is
We're going to have to make our own horse and buggies in our own little town. We'll be independent, but we'll be relatively poor. If we want stateless from Connecticut, we're going to have a more powerful federal government. If the federal government is going to have to take over more control, it's going to have to do more work, it's going to have to take more money. Therefore, the unit, the spreading, the demand of a high standard of living is going to widen the government, which is going to mean more money must go to the government to pay for the functions that that wider government must fulfill. Therefore, the what is just taxation depends upon what functions you are wanting the government to fulfill. And if you want to pay less taxes, maybe you must want the government to do less work. But if that's so, then you must pay the price. If you want customs barriers to go back up all over the United States, fine. But if you don't want customs barriers all over the United States, then you've got to take a federal government with a certain amount of power. The question of taxation, what is a just tax, depends upon what functions you are wanting the government that's demanding the taxes to fulfill. What you cannot do is require the local government, for instance, the little town of Winona, I cannot require the police to keep the hooligans off my property and then not pay any tax to the township to support those police. I can't do it reasonably. Either I've got to refuse to pay all taxes, in that case I must be willing to have absolute chaos on my property, or if I want some order in my property, in justice, I must pay some tax to the township. It's obviously not just for me to pay taxes to the local government, the state government, or the federal government to fund abortion. That's wicked. And on the question of taxes, what is a just tax? Look at the moral theologians. And I think St. Alphonsus of Liguori, in the 18th century, he said something like, unfortunately I haven't got the quotation right under my hand, he said something like, as for modern governments, about two-thirds of what they ask in taxes is just, the other third is unjust. St. Alphonsus of Liguori, 200 years ago. So St. Alphonsus of Liguori, who was a saint and a doctor of the church, taught that in the 18th century, a certain amount of what the government was requiring in taxes was unjust.
But in his time, taxes were lower.
Much lower.
Much lower.
But government did much less. You see, the point is this, you've got to choose. As they say in French, you've got to know what you want. You pays your money, you takes a choice. If you want much less lower taxes, you can't expect the government to do so much.
Well, we are not discussing here about such obvious things like police, army, but what about financed by state or local government art?
Arts.
3 years ago, there was a big scandal in states where...
Oh, yeah, I know. The question of the government subsidizing the arts is a difficult question. Let's put it this way. Well, the whole question of the art today is a difficult question because the arts are corrupt. The arts are kaput. The art is kaput because there's no God in men's hearts. When you've got God in your heart, you naturally sing. When you haven't got God in your heart, you naturally produce modern music, which is ugly cacophonous. But people today realize that art is a prestigious and good thing, so they want art, but you've no longer got what you had, let's say, 300 years ago, the aristocrats who used to be patrons of the arts. And so people say, we need art, therefore we have to have patrons, we've no longer got individuals who will do it, therefore the government must do it. But the government is unfit to be a patron of the arts. He that gathereth not with me scattereth. And since the government is godless, it moves into the question of the arts, then it patronizes filthy art. And that's where the scandal comes from. But the government has got no business in patronizing the arts. It's got the money, but it hasn't got the artistic sense or taste. And therefore it's really got no business in patronizing the arts. But then who else is going to look after the arts?
Individuals who are interested.
Yes.
This will be cheaper only individuals who are interested will...
But you see, let me say, for instance, now let's take a symphony orchestra. A symphony orchestra is expensive today, especially with the wages of all the bassoon players and the clarinet players, it's expensive. Now, no doubt a symphony orchestra is what they call today an improvement of the quality of life. Right? No question about it. Beautiful music keeps a lot of city dwellers going. It's a kind of oxygen for their souls amidst so much other ugliness. Therefore, people say, and a wise ruler today, an intelligent man, says it's good for the city to have a symphony orchestra, as long as people will still come, and therefore somebody ought to subsidize that. Somebody ought to pay for that. If there aren't private individuals, then that's something, you can see the argument for the state doing it. The state has the money. That's something that maybe the state should do, to some extent. So, I've been saying the state shouldn't subsidize the arts, now I'm saying the state should subsidize the arts. It's a delicate question. Ideally, it would be individuals. Like in Beethoven's day, it was Prince Lobkowitz and Prince Razumovsky.
But how many good examples can we find, and how many bad examples can we find? Probably good examples like you have given.
Yes.
Is the only one, or there are not many?
Well, I think today there are many American cities which subsidize a symphony orchestra, and I think that's reasonable. I do think that's reasonable. But you've also got the federal government subsidizing this filth of Mapplethorpe and so on and so on.
And
that's
most of this money goes for such enterprise.
Look, what it comes down to, we're getting into a question of nuts and bolts, which is not basically solvable with nuts and bolts. You can't solve these human problems from outside in. You've got to solve them from the inside out. If you put back the faith into people, you're going to put back the art. The art is just naturally going to come out of them again. I mean, you make a mass center, you start saying the mass in a little village or a little town, and before long your choir starts up. And before long, you know, somebody starts wanting to decorate the walls. Naturally, art follows religion just like, you know, afternoon follows the morning. Art comes with religion. And that's how it should come from inside. And people, in a little chapel of the society, in a little chapel with a Tridentine mass, people don't worry about paying for the music or paying for the choir. That's nuts and bolts, you know. And if somebody has, somebody will usually step in. Some Catholic will step in and say, hey, Father Priest will say, look, we'll buy an organ. And he approaches one of the parishioners, and the parishioner says, okay, look, here it is. Boom, and he gives the money. You know, and then the organ gets bought. I mean, it's so much better to do it that way. Than to have it sort of try to structure and organize it. That in modern life, in the modern state, since the intermediate organizations have all been destroyed, there's nothing but the poor little individuals at the bottom and then the massive state on top. And so the poor little individuals turn to the massive state and say, the state has got to do it. And the state isn't the right person to do it. The state hasn't got the skill, it hasn't got the knowledge of circumstances, it hasn't got the faith, it steps into the gap because there's nobody else. Because everything else than the monolithic state, everything else has been destroyed. It's the problem. Joseph.
Because I interrupted half an hour ago the whole thing, I say that. Like, the worker is Catholic, the boss is Catholic,
yeah.
That thinks the most of the state or the everything, it's Catholic.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, if they all think the Christian, the Catholic way,
yeah.
Do you know the boss, if he puts the things on his things, he has to go the next Sunday to confession.
That's right.
That's right.
And the worker has to go to confession
if he
screws his boss.
That's right.
And all that. So if it was the ideal, is the Catholic state, absolutely, the Catholic community, the Catholic family,
that's right,
then everything would work.
That's
I think this is the info we can close with. You know, like, I mean, that would be the idea.
Last point, Ruben, and then we'll take a break until the next.
That provided the bishop is not Irish.
At 11 o'clock, we'll take a look at communism. You will take a look at communism.